This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The problem with restrooms. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Even as stores and restaurants begin to reopen, some customers are unwilling to use public bathrooms in the wake of the pandemic. Hear how some retailers are responding.
On the travel front, long after passengers disembarked, why an estimated 100,000 workers on cruise ships remain stuck at sea.
Experts are examining why people of color are disproportionately being killed by COVID-19. Hear what research is saying.
And how coronavirus restrictions are set to change traditions in college football.
They're trying to find a way to make it safe. And part of that is just, you know, psychological and reassuring fans that it's going to be okay to enter these, you know, large-scale gatherings at stadiums, and, you know, they're not potentially risking their life or, you know, putting others that they love at risk by doing so.
Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal on college football traditions in the wake of the pandemic. Whether it's the mall, restaurants, concerts, ballparks, or even drive-in movie theaters, Americans are making it clear they won't be ready to go out to their favorite destinations until they feel confident about being able to go to the bathroom. It's a story by Mark Fisher, senior editor at the Washington Post. Mark, what are you hearing?
Even as governments are saying it's okay to come back in the water, there are a lot of people who are hesitant. And one of the reasons they're hesitant is when you go out of your home, you are inevitably, after some hours, going to have to use somebody else's facilities and be in public bathrooms with other people. And for a lot of people, that gives them a little bit of the heebie-jeebies at this point, because it's such close quarters, so tightly cramped. There's all sorts of aerosol stuff in the air in those rooms. How often are they cleaned? Who's doing the cleaning? All these questions arise that make people nervous, and that it's really kind of an interesting insight into just how anxious people are. And we're seeing this in every situation, from workplaces to shops to potentially movie theaters and sports venues down the road. So it's really an issue that business owners are finding they have to do something about.
Mm. All right, so these public restrooms, right, they've always been a source of ick, right, in some way, shape, or form, which is why there are signs everywhere. You know, employees must wash hands before returning to work. How come all of a sudden we're concerned about this particular germ?
Well, this germ, as we know, is highly contagious, and it's you know, you can take all kinds of precautions when you're in a shop, in a public place, whether it's masks or keeping some social distance. But those precautions become almost impossible in a bathroom because they tend to be so tight. Most landlords don't devote a lot of space to bathrooms, unlike perhaps in other countries. And so we've never put the premium on the bathroom cleanliness. Just think about your local gas station.
Yes.
And so it's something that makes people nervous. And so there are some physical fixes that people can do. Some of them are very expensive in terms of removing some of the hardware, creating more social distance, more space in bathrooms. And some of them are just a question of policy. And so you see that some of the restaurants and bars that are beginning to open up in some states are hiring bathroom monitors to stand outside and make sure that only one person goes in at a time, or only a couple of folks. So we're going to see kind of behavioral changes that people are going to be asked to make to make it feel safer.
Yeah, you know, you've made a good point in the story, and that's, okay, terrific. You want to remove a urinal, or make the stalls more spacious, or have more space between them, that's fine. However, that means more people can't be in the bathroom at the same time, and therefore a line begins to queue.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's kind of a catch-22. And so you get people saying, well, I'm willing to go this amount away from my home, but I need to get back home. And one of the reasons they're saying that is they need to get back home to do their business.
Yeah.
And so it really is, I think psychologically, it's a bridge that a lot of people don't want to talk about because we're uncomfortable talking about these things, but it is holding them back from certain kinds of behavior. We even see it in big, wide open spaces, drive-in movie theaters. Before they're reopening, they're having to figure out how many people can queue up for the bathroom and where we're going to put those people, and people are hiring extra staff to have a very obvious presence of people cleaning at all times. That's just kind of a psychological bomb, if you will, but it's helpful because people are anxious.
We're speaking with Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post. His piece is called Why Public Bathrooms Are a Stumbling Block for Reopening. You referenced, too, that at least some businesses are considering like these no-door entries that you might see in, what, an airport, right?
Yeah. Those kind of S-shaped entrances where you wend your way in, because people don't want to touch those public doors. They don't want to touch surfaces that other people have touched, particularly when their hands are perhaps wet and just cleaned. So we're seeing that people are removing some of the doors when that's feasible for public bathrooms. And they're also, as you said, they're eliminating some of the urinals and stalls. You're seeing that some sinks are being taped off to create that distancing. But there are some very expensive ways of fixing this that involve wholesale renovation, and there are companies now out there that are being swamped with requests from business owners to do that. But I think more commonly you're going to see these very quick fixes of taping off certain areas and putting those lines down on the floor so that people know to keep that far apart from each other.
Boy, and now all of a sudden these energy-efficient, super powerful hand dryers that don't require wasteful paper towels are on the outs because they can blow stuff around? Is that the thinking?
Those are perfect germ spreaders. Wow. And there were people who shied away from them even before the virus came along, but now you're seeing a wholesale movement away from them and a return to good old-fashioned paper towels.
How about that? Thanks, Mark. Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day weekend with us. In the Avenue of Ocean that stretches south from Miami to Cuba and then northeast to the Bahamas, dozens of cruise ships sail back and forth. Every so often, they come into Florida ports to refuel and restock. Otherwise, they wait. Taylor Dalvin, business reporter at the Miami Herald, says the passengers are long gone, but about 100,000 crew members on board remain trapped at sea with little reliable information about when they can return to their families on land. Taylor, what's up here?
Crew members are still stuck on ships, as the headline suggests. Cruising in the U.S. was canceled altogether on March 13th. We saw a scramble after that, obviously, to get ships back to port and to get passengers safely home. That effort took months, and is during that time crew members remained on board largely. Some were even brought, new crew members were brought on board. It's important to remember that the industry thought they were shutting down for a month. They were prepared for a 30-day halt on operations. Well, mid-April came and went, and the CDC actually banned cruising through at least the end of July. And so now we're in a situation where more than 100,000 crew members are unable to get home, are still waiting to be repatriated from these ships. Meanwhile, more are getting sick with COVID-19, and they tell me their mental health is really deteriorating.
Wow. All right, so for some of these folks, I would imagine they've exceeded the 14-day quarantine time, right? But that doesn't matter? That doesn't play in here?
Yeah, so there's a lot of issues going on. Countries have put in travel restrictions. Those range from, for example, in the U.S., if companies want to disembark crew in the U.S., they have to transport them home using private transportation. So that means a charter flight or a private bus or car. And then the extreme travel restriction is countries that are not allowing any foreign nationals to be repatriated yet. So for all the nationalities of people who work on cruise ships, the companies are having to deal with these restrictions for all of them and navigate the logistics there. There are crew members who have been in their cabins for more than 14 days, for more than a month, and unable to leave in a sort of quarantine isolation situation. But yeah, it's difficult. I know the companies are working incredibly hard on this, but it's also really expensive for them to meet the demands of these governments who are, you know, understandably looking out for the health and safety of people in their countries and also for their health system infrastructure. So that's leaving these more than 100,000 people in limbo.
My goodness. How much time have some of these crew members spent? Like, who's been on the longest? Is there a particular ship, for example?
Well, they've all been, I mean, the industry shut down on March 13th. So more than 2 months, these crew members have been stuck and haven't touched land.
Wow. We're speaking with Taylor Dolvin, business reporter at the Miami Herald. She's got a fascinating piece entitled "No Information, No Way Off. 100,000 crew members remain in cruise ship limbo for months." How about the mental health of some of these folks? You referenced it earlier.
Yeah, crew members tell me they're growing increasingly desperate. You know, every time they're told of a date they'll be flying home or a plan to get them home, that plan has fell through. And it really hurts their mental health. And just remaining, you know, not being on land, remaining sometimes in their rooms isolated, if not just remaining on these ships, is really difficult. Many of them aren't being paid. If they are being paid, it's not their regular salary. And so they're worried, you know, about their families and how they'll support them. And they're just not able to leave. They just have no control over the situation. So I would say just increasingly desperate and hopeless.
Boy, have some of the ships been completely free of coronavirus at this point?
Yes. So our reporting, we are tracking the number of coronavirus cases linked to cruise ships, and we found that a little over 20% of the global cruise fleet has been affected by the virus. So that leaves the rest that we haven't found any cases for those ships.
That is unbelievable. Taylor Dolvin, business reporter at the Miami Herald. 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, college football traditions in trouble. Everything begins with an idea, but how do you bring it to life? If your idea requires graphic design, copywriting, web programming, or some other skill, how do you locate that help? For the talent you need at a price you can afford, the answer is Fiverr. Fiverr connects you to a network of trusted freelance talent that's worked on some of the most influential brands in the world. Fiverr talents offer hundreds of digital services that you can search by service, deadline, price, reviews, and more. With Fiverr, there are no unknowns. You'll know exactly what you're paying for upfront with no negotiation. And Fiverr's talents are proven to ensure you get the expertise you need to bring your idea to life. And when you give Fiverr a try now, you'll save. Check out Fiverr.com today and use my code Gordon to receive 10% off your first order. It's so easy. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and the code Gordon. Try Fiverr today. Thanks for joining us. Sports fans are longing to return to the stands, but health experts say stadiums are one of the highest risk areas for coronavirus transmission. Big decisions ahead for the college football season. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
It's not clear if the college football season will start on time or at all, and whether fans will be allowed to attend when play begins. School and conference administrators are working furiously on numerous contingency plans. Here with more, Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Lane, your story focused on football powerhouse Texas A&M. What are some of the things that school is looking at?
Well, that school is a school that has said, you know, we want to have football in the fall, and they're trying to find a way to make it safe. And part of that is just, you know, psychological and reassuring fans that it's going to be okay to enter these, you know, large-scale gatherings at stadiums, and, you know, they're not potentially risking their life or, you know, putting others that they love at risk by doing so. And, you know, they're thinking about extra ways that you can add sanitation. So perhaps, you know, one of the choke points when you go into a stadium now is when you're in those long snaking lines going through metal detectors. Maybe those lines will be spaced out and you might have a specific time when you could enter the stadium. And, you know, after you go through the metal detector, maybe there's some sort of sanitation experience. And, you know, maybe concessions look different. It's a little bit more technology-based and contactless. And, you know, when you're actually in the seats, maybe you're farther apart from the people next to you. And, you know, all of these measures do sound like they're going to be, most of them are going to be temporary. And, you know, when it's safe to have Kyle Field to its full capacity of almost 103,000, they definitely want to be back there. Because, you know, that's such a key part of the experience of sports is the crowd. And, you know, it's very different when you have a crowd of, you know, 20,000 in a huge stadium like Kyle Field versus when it's full. And I think, you know, it's something we all want to go back to, and Texas A&M is, you know, thinking about the ways that it can kind of incrementally get back there.
If the number of people are limited coming in, if there's some kind of physical distancing that's put into place, how in the world are they going to decide who gets tickets?
You know, that is a million-dollar question. I think that's something that Texas A&M is still working out, because there's kind of two pots of season ticket holders. One is students, and they currently have a system that prioritizes, you know, involvement on campus, seniority, various other factors in terms of how likely you are to get tickets, because there's, I think, about 35,000 student tickets, and, you know, their undergrad population is a little bit bigger than that, and, you know, including graduates. So I think they might have some of the infrastructure in place for that in terms of, and they likely will have to be modified. But then this other pot of season ticket holders is, you know, alumni, fans, residents, et cetera. And it's really unclear how you prioritize that, because, you know, do you do it based on how much money you donated to the school? Do you do it based on, you know, how many games you've been to, how long you've had the tickets? You know, it's uncertain. And the university is still thinking about how it will attempt to refund. And, you know, if there's no fans at any games, it's something it's going to have to consider. But, you know, with the baseball season at A&M that was canceled, they said that when they were in the process of reaching out to people that had bought tickets and refunding them, they asked several patrons to say, you know, do you want to just donate the money to Texas A&M? And, you know, it's okay if you don't get refunded for the few games you missed, but you'll be supporting the program still. And I guess a fair amount of alumni did decide to do that. So it's possible that, like, they might not see the games in person, but their money will still be going to the university to support the program. So it's kind of unclear how all of this is going to work out. And, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of questions from potentially angry and curious fans to, you know, Ross Bjork, the athletic director, and others within the program about how you prioritize this.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Speaking of anger and crowds and everything else, you don't really have a football game without tailgating. That's certainly something else that needs to be worked out.
Yes. And, you know, this one might actually be a little bit easier to enforce, potentially. So Ross Bjork, the athletic director there, said that there is 5,200 acres of land that all is in the Texas A&M, I guess, property base. And that makes it, you know, space is pretty abundant there. So if you needed to open up a few more lots for tailgating or have people spread out a little bit, like, there is space to do that.
A lot to think about. This weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal sports reporter Lane Higgins. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day weekend with us. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenko, coming up this half hour, tackling poverty in a coronavirus downturn. Also, the Army deploying video games in order to reach recruits. And a military families group goes virtual for Memorial Day. That story in about 20 minutes. The social problems born of poverty, like unstable housing, food insecurity, lack of transportation, and the trauma caused by them, are a key reason health experts say people of color are being disproportionately sickened and killed by the coronavirus pandemic. Public health advocates hope the virus, which has put the economy at grave risk, will lead to funding boosts for proven ways to tackle poverty and improve health. It's a story by Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. Jane set this up.
You have to address the things that really make people sick. I mean, a lot of what makes people sick, middle class people, you know, might be self-induced. It's genetic. You know, we might eat too much. We might drink too much. We might have a history of heart disease. But But the people who cost the health system the most money and who are being disproportionately affected by COVID are the people who are usually very low income or just low income. Not, they don't have to be very low income, but they are living paycheck to paycheck. They can't afford healthy food. They're often people of color. They often are the ones that have to work during an epidemic like this, face to face with people, and they cost the system a lot of money. So working on helping them get better access to health care, getting them food, making sure they have stable housing, that saves the healthcare system a lot of money. But the healthcare system has long been incentivized in a way to just keep treating the effects of, say, the diabetes. But that is it's kind of cruel in effect to not help people become cured of these diseases.
Is there anybody standing by a program that works with something like this?
Yeah, and that was my big question, and I spend a lot of time. I have a program called the Urban Health Media Project, as if I don't have enough work with my day job, but I work in D.C. and Baltimore on teaching young people to do this kind of journalism, health journalism, and that's what I always tell them. You know, let's find the solutions. And what I see, what I've seen with my own eyes, and anybody who's been to an urban area, is that a lot of times, you know, there are some really serious problems when these young people get to their teen years, because issues weren't addressed when they were young. So early childhood programs are very, very helpful. It can be Head Start. There's a couple that have some science behind them, one that I mentioned called the Absiderian Project in North Carolina. But it's wrapping around a lot of services when kids, particularly low-income kids, are born, so that they can better, their parents learn how to parent better, and they are better able to handle stress and how to and are watched or given therapy as they grow up. So it's education. You know, it's, you know, making the brain connections when they're, most of them are made in their first 3 years, having all those little light bulbs go off, and the kids end up becoming more likely to go to graduate from high school, to go to college, and to have a successful career and not be not be a burden, frankly, to the government. You know.
You referenced, too, in the story that widespread use of video visits and new ways of paying healthcare providers could be helpful here. Explain that a little bit.
Well, it can certainly increase access to these providers. You know, there's a shortage in rural areas. There's a shortage in urban areas. There's a shortage of mental health professionals in McLean, Virginia, where I live in my little house around all these big houses. I mean, if I had somebody I knew that had a child that needed, had a bit of a breakdown, we couldn't find, money was no object. We couldn't find a mental health professional.
Thanks, Jane. Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles, since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Glad you're with us. Amid the swirl of news, the latest fatality count or the unemployment claims, the daily action of the stock market, for example, it's easy to get unnerved and start second-guessing our investment strategy. How can we keep ourselves on the stock market train? Personal finance expert Jonathan Clements has a list of thoughts you may find comforting. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Jonathan, give us guidance.
Well, Gordon, a lot of people are somewhat disconsolate, not only about the stock market, but also about the economy and the coronavirus, and with good reason. It's been a rough couple of months, and yet I would say to people, you know, this too shall pass. We are going to get through this, and particularly when it comes to the stock market, one of the things that I would tell people is we all know it's bad. We all know the economy is bad. We all know that we're struggling to contain the coronavirus, and yet, the stock market really has not fallen that far. The decline from peak to trough was substantially less than it was in 2008 and 2009 during the Great Recession. It was substantially less than in the early 2000s when we not only had the tech bust, but also the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And moreover, since we hit bottom back in late March, the stock market has recouped more than half of its loss. In the face of all this bad news, The stock market performance really hasn't been that bad.
Boy, one of the things you pointed out that has really become apparent in all of this is your sentence in which you say, investors collectively don't care about the suffering of everyday citizens.
It's absolutely true, Gordon. People do not buy stocks because they're worried about you and me. The reason they buy stocks is because they think corporate earnings are going to rise in the future. And given the stock market's performance of late, the way it's bounced back from the March 23rd low, what investors are saying is they think corporate earnings are going to recover pretty quickly. I don't know whether they're right, yeah. But that's the bet that investors are collectively making. And as an investor, if you're sitting there and saying, wow, I can't believe how much money I've lost in the market this year, you should take comfort from the fact that investors are betting the economy is going to come back pretty quickly.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece about some comforting things we might want to keep in mind amidst all the news that we're processing each and every day. What else did you include in here?
Well, one of the things that I mentioned here is that as we invest, we should realize that nobody is perfect. We are not going to call this market right. We're not going to be able to pick out which sectors are going to come roaring back. We're not going to be able to guess precisely when the market's going to return to new highs. And in the face of this uncertainty and the fact that we are profoundly ignorant about the future, what we need to do is to diversify. We need to own a globally diversified stock portfolio while at the same time making sure that any money we need to spend in the next 5 years is out of the stock market and sitting in cash investments or in high-quality bonds. This strategy that comes out of our profound ignorance, means that we will make mistakes. We will end up owning parts of the global stock market that won't perform that well. We may end up with too much in cash and bonds, but this is the strategy that we have to pursue given our ignorance about the future and just accept the fact that we are not going to call this perfectly.
Jonathan Clements, founder and editor at HumbleDollar.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately, I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now you can keep your face looking smooth too, or your beard looking clean, with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a five-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today. Glad you're with us. Army recruiters unable to head to high schools and set up booths at state fairs because of the coronavirus are turning to video game tournaments to reach prospective soldiers. It's a story by Ben Kessling, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Ben, what's going on?
So one of the things that the Army did was they started using video game tournaments to have more outreach to potential recruits. The Army, since 2018, has really been using video games more broadly as a way of outreach. In 2019, they have started an esports team, so there's an actual Army team with soldiers who play video games full-time. And through that, they've been able to talk to more people remotely online and have gotten thousands of leads by doing this.
Yeah. Didn't you say that they actually have done better with leads through some of these video game tournaments than, say, actually setting up at a state fair?
Yeah, so one recruiting battalion in Syracuse, New York, had an event that had the single most number of leads they've ever gotten from any event was through a Call of Duty tournament, which is a first person shooting, very popular video game, and doesn't use as many man hours to do some of this recruiting. So, you know, think about if you're going to like a state fair or setting up a booth at a convention or something, you've got to go through all the setup. You've got to take people and they have to man it the whole time. If you're in a video game tournament, a lot of times a few people can really have a greater impact with less man hours going into it. And so the Army's been able to do that. Now, it remains to be seen whether or not ultimately this, let's just say, the Army's not going to be replacing your recruiter at your local high school with folks who are just doing virtual recruiting. This is just another tool in the Army's toolkit, but it comes at a very opportune time because there's no in-person recruiting happening for the most part.
We're speaking with Ben Kessling, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Army Deploys Video Games to Reach Recruits Amid Pandemic. Wow. So how are you a video game recruiter with the U.S. Army? How does it work?
So the Army had, I spoke with the de facto head of the Army's, sports team, so the team that just plays video games full time. And a couple years ago, he was serving as a recruiter, he's a senior enlisted guy, was serving as a recruiter in Louisiana and realized that he was making a lot of connections with potential recruits by talking about video games.
How might a conversation start if you're online, I guess, competing against somebody who could be a recruit? Do you say, hey, you seem to be pretty good with that gun. What's your name, age, and email address?
the thing about the Army's recruiting effort with these video games is they don't want to come off as just recruiters who are kind of who have entered these like cyber areas to purposefully recruit. A lot of the conversations come up organically. Okay. So what happens is the Army esports team will be playing. Somebody who they're playing against will see that, oh, they're playing, you know, the person's profile shows that they're a soldier and they're active duty. They're part of the Army esports team.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Kessling, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for being with us. This year, Memorial Day will look a little different for the community involved in the Wear Blue Run to Remember. But that won't stop the group from running for the fallen. Lisa Hallett, co-founder of Wear Blue Run to Remember, has taken the organization's annual Memorial Day activities virtual during the COVID-19 crisis. Wear Blue is a nonprofit running community honoring the service and sacrifice of the American military. Participation in the Wear Blue event is at no cost. You simply commit to a number of miles to run or walk or move in some way on Memorial Day. Runners will be invited to join a Zoom circle of remembrance before starting. Fox News says the movement is personal. Ms. Hallett lost her husband, Army Captain John Hallett, while he was on a tour in Afghanistan. He was killed just 3 weeks after the birth of their third child. We salute the fallen. You can learn more at wearbluerunToRemember.org. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.